As I'm turning my head around, you can see how the system is learning to recognize me.
Honeybees just happen to be God's gift to mankind.
The problem of tracking bees is significantly more difficult than tracking people.
This is Future Lab, the online radio show from Intel Labs. I'm Jason Lopez.
Getting computers to play chess is relatively easy, and getting them to do the things that we think are easy is in fact extremely difficult.
On today's show, we'll meet scientists whose work in computer vision is increasing our understanding of machine learning. Just about any science fiction story set in the future has a computer, a robot, or an android which can recognize people and its surroundings. And when that day comes, it will be because many researchers spent a lot of time investigating a very difficult problem. The blink of an eye assessments we make of situations that we see, that's a big computing challenge. Michael Johnson visited some labs and a beehive to find out more.
Computers are part of our everyday lives. Most of us have them at home, at work, and carry so-called smartphones around everywhere we go. One could say we know computers pretty well, but how well do they know us? Does your computer greet you as you enter the room? Could it be that we're smarter than our smartphones? I took this question to Rahul Sukthankar, senior principal research scientist at Intel Labs in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
So one of the things that I found people don't get immediately is that there are a lot of tasks that humans do that are very, very easy. So for us, walking comes easily, recognizing things. These things come easily, and other things like chess are really hard. So we intuitively believe that for machines to do the hard task must be difficult, and to do the easy task must be easy. It's turned out that in the last few decades, we've learned that it's exactly the opposite. In fact, getting computers to play chess was relatively easy, and getting them to do the things that we think are easy is, in fact, extremely difficult. The reason for that is that humans possess a great deal of specialized hardware in the back of our heads that handles these hard tasks, like walking and seeing. And in fact, the task is so difficult that if we were to pay conscious attention to them, they would be very, very difficult for us to do.
One area of Sukthankar's research concentrates on computer vision, getting machines to process data in such a way that they can perceive conditions in the real world. He says that this would have many practical applications, like medical imaging.
We'd like to help rural doctors do a better job at diagnosing the cases that come in front of them. So right now, it's a challenging task because unless you're an expert and very experienced with all the different cases that come in front of you, you may not know what to do with a particular case. Our system uses computer vision and machine learning to give doctors a better context of the kinds of cases that might have been similar to the case that they've seen here. And by doing that, it lets them make a more informed decision. So you can think of it as kind of a Google image search, but turned inside out. Rather than giving it a search term and finding similar images, you say, hey, have you seen anything like this? And the system goes out and says, oh yes, there were these other 100 cases that were much like yours, and this is the kind of decision the doctors made. These are the outcomes. So based on that, maybe you can make a more informed decision.
Lily Mummert is also a research scientist at Intel Labs in Pittsburgh, and she works in the area of applied systems, taking a group of computers to solve practical problems.
And so what we would like to do is to use sensing technology to do non-destructive crop load estimation. So one of the ways that people estimate now is they actually go and, you know, sample parts of the crop, and that's destructive sampling. Right, you actually sacrifice maybe a small percentage of the crop. So if we can do non-destructive perception, we might be able to get better coverage than you might with sampling, right? Because we all know that there's a lot of variability within a given area and within the way a particular crop grows. And you would be able to do this non-destructively.
Another application of Mummert's research in the field of agriculture concerns honeybees.
What we've been working on is a video-based activity counter for honeybee colonies. So arrival and departure counts can be used to, for example, detect events of importance to people who keep bees. So, for example, swarming is one very important event that would be indicated by a large departure count. And usually beekeepers want to know about swarming before it happens. They want to know that there's a potential for a swarm so they could actually maybe try to trap it or something like that. But at the very least, if a swarm is going to happen, it would be good to know about it. And often it happens at times of day when, you know, if you have a full-time job, you can't be there, you may not notice it. But even after the fact, it would be useful to know that it happened.
Honeybees are vastly important for our food supply, and honeybee tracking may lend a hand when it comes to a growing problem which is confounding scientists and farmers alike.
We have been observing, beginning in 2006, a unusual phenomenon. The term has been coined colony collapse disorder.
That's Mary Purcell Miramontes, an entomologist and a national program leader with the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The characteristics of it is there is a rapid loss of adult workers in the hive. Honeybees are a social insect, and there are thousands of individuals in a colony, and they have a caste system, and there is one particular class known as the foragers or the workers, and they are the ones that go out and provide the food and bring it in and feed the young and feed the queen. So keepers of bees would find all of a sudden that there were very few of these adult workers remaining in their hive. They just couldn't find where these bees had gone. The hive had an excess number of young bees, which are known as brood, and those bees will not survive very long without the workers to provide them with food.
She says that stress factors like pesticides, parasites, and transportation of hives for commercial agriculture purposes may all be contributors to colony collapse disorder, and that if the problem isn't addressed soon, hundreds of crops across the world that rely on pollinators like the honeybee could be at risk.
You see the pollen going in here? So you can see a lot. You'll see bees coming in with their back legs full of pollen. When you see pollen going in, you know that they're feeding the brood, and that's an indication that they're healthy.
Steve Gentry is a professional beekeeper in Orinda, California.
Honeybees just happen to be God's gift to mankind, really, seriously. There is very few insects that humans could, A, eat everything and use everything that's in that hive, including the larvae. Propolis, beeswax, honey, everybody eats that.
Once again, Intel researcher Rahul Sakthankar.
In the case of honeybees, the challenge is how can you find something that's as small as a bee that's moving very rapidly in the scene, even though the lighting can be changing, for instance, in daylight and cloudy days, as well as with shadows flickering in the background. Bees are very small, they move rapidly in the frame, and they look identical. So the problem of tracking bees is significantly more difficult than tracking people, for instance, that might be wearing different clothing. I'm wearing a red shirt, you're wearing a black shirt. It might be easier for people who are building algorithms for tracking people to take advantage of those facts.
Another application for computer vision and perception is face recognition. And although computers are getting faster, according to Branislav Kvetin, machine learning scientist and researcher at Intel Labs in Santa Clara, California, they're not getting any smarter.
Part of the algorithms that I've been working on are very practical machine learning algorithms. And the main point is it's very easy to train them. These days, face recognition algorithms, many of them are very good. If you give them hundreds and hundreds of examples of your face, they can recognize again that this is the person who is you. But if you want to deploy this technology in the real world, you cannot ask a consumer hundreds of times, is this my face? Is this my face? Is this my face? And part of the algorithms that I'm working on, you just register your face only once. And then the more computer is watching you, then the better it gets. So you essentially get the technology where the consumer doesn't have to interact with it a lot, and it gets the benefit out of it.
Kvetin is developing machine vision algorithms for facial recognition. He likens this to a kind of visual password where a computer can perceive its owner's face. Here he demonstrates the process.
So first, we just my face appears on the camera, and we registered one my face, and now as I'm turning my head around, you can see how the system is learning to recognize me. Now another person enters the video, and again we register one face of the person, and now again the person can turn his head around or make smiles or frown or anything, and again the system is learning to recognize it. Now I'm entering again the video, and you can see the system can recognize two people in parallel. So again, it recognizes more than one person at a time. And now we get the third person of the video. And I think very important about every face recognition system is to recognize that there is a person, but not to claim that it's either person one or person two. And that's a mistake that many machine learning algorithms are making. So again, we know there is a person, but it's neither of the two people that we registered. Imagine that there would be a small camera on the TV, which would be looking back at you. So imagine after a long day, you just come back home after you had a horrible, horrible day. The TV wishes you a nice day and shows you movies that you might want to watch. I think these applications are not science fiction anymore, and probably the technology is already out there to achieve this.
That's our show for today. This is Future Lab, the online radio program from Intel Labs. We've posted pictures that go with today's show on Flickr. Just search the terms Future Lab and Intel. For more about Intel Labs, go to intel.com/research.